de lunes a jueves. You
find the safari park.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry!
Larry, get into bed now!
Come on, Larry!
Is there no sweeter sound than that of your own name, buried in cheers and applause? Well, I think not. Hey, welcome. We're going to change it up this time and front load a little housekeeping. I'm getting more and more questions about a live show, and there's nothing I'd rather do. But to make that happen, we've got to expand the audience. So here's an opportunity to score yourself one of our banging official Take No Shit Dojo shirts, absolutely free, while helping us spread the gospel of Take No Shit. Got a celebrity follower on Twitter or Facebook? Well, then, turn them on to the show. Send us a screenshot of their post or tweet that endorses ThatLarryShow.com. One will be selected at random, and presto, the shirt is yours. Now, besides questions about the live show, we get all kinds of questions about, well, you name it. People can be having a tough time with all sorts of hang-ups and problems. Nobody calls them hang-ups or problems anymore. Have you noticed that? Now they call them issues and challenges. Well, truth lives at the Take No Shit Dojo, and calling a problem an issue or a challenge camouflages the truth somewhat, doesn't it? Kinda takes the edge off what's ailing us. A challenge might be to run a marathon, or bench press twice your body weight, or restore a classic car, or learn some tricky riff. But if you don't meet that challenge, well, there's always next time. A problem is something that, if not dealt with, can fuck up your life. So we call things by their true names here. The moment they start with dishonest verbiage, we smash their knuckles with a Kenpo stick. We don't tolerate bullshit in this dojo. Now sometimes, oftentimes, we are the architect of our own problems. We can be our own worst enemy, and if that's the case, life is going to be a fucking bear, because life and assholes will throw more than enough trouble our way. I got an email from a Patreone and dojo member in Southern Florida who prefers to call himself Ginger Ale, so we always honor pseudonyms and aliases, and the reason for his will come clear in a moment. Here's what Mr. Ale has to say. Larry, I dig your show, and always listen while lifting weights. Well, it's good to know I'm part of a proper health regimen. Mr. Ale goes on. I am a recovering alcoholic and cocaine addict. I quit everything 2 years ago. A friend of mine that I've known since middle school was the guy I usually hung out and partied with me throughout my teenage years and 20s. Once I quit everything, he got a shitty attitude toward me and everything I say and do. I sign up for courses. He tells me it's a waste of time. I start working out. He says I'm just wasting my money joining a gym. In the meantime, this dude is a 30-year-old weed dealer who never got a paycheck in his life and lives with his mom. I'm sure he feels abandoned or whatever that I'm not getting drunk or doing blow with him anymore. But I have no problem going to bars or being at parties because my willpower these days is a lot stronger than it was a few years back. I hardly talk to him anymore because I don't have the time to sit around and watch him play video games or get shit-faced. But we have a lot of the same friends, so I do see him around often. The other day he was having a party his mom let him throw. I was not planning on going because my sister and I were meeting at a gun show. So when he calls to tell me about the party and I say I can't make it, he tells me I wasn't invited anyway. Well, I knew a lot of people who did attend the party, and one of them calls me next day to ask why I wasn't there. I told her I was at a gun show with my sister. She tells my friend explain my absence by telling people that I made women uncomfortable. On one hand, I want to say, fuck that guy. But then again, I've known him 18 years, and it does suck losing a buddy. All the best, Ginger Ale. Well, first, Ginger Ale, thanks for listening and allowing me to share your story with the rest of the club. Secondly, congratulations on getting sober. No question, addiction's a bitch, and they take down so many people. But I predict with certainty that you, unlike thousands, if not millions, of those who relapse again and again and again and sometimes never get straight, your days of addiction are permanently behind you because of one key word you used. A word that is absolutely essential, not only to beating addictions, but to winning anything in life. Anybody know what Ginger Ale's magic word was? Well, here it is. Willpower. You don't hear that word much anymore, because too many charlatan shrinks and avaricious drug companies and fucktards of every stripe do not like that word, because that is a word that sets people, like Mr. Ale here, on a path to strength and success. The only success that is true and lasting, success achieved solamente. So glad you tuned me in at the gym, Mr. Ale, because isn't that a place where willpower reigns supreme? I've been a gym goer most of my life, and to be honest, I don't dig it very much. I'd rather toddle down to the local watering hole and have a beer, see if Sarge the Sniper from episode 20 is around. Or maybe read a book, or pick my git fiddle, or hit the piano, or whatever. But what I do like about the gym are the results it has always given me. Makes me feel pretty good when I'm done, and gives me the physical edge that sitting around on your ass cannot. I'm going to digress a bit here and probably piss off some people, but that's okay. The phony shrinks and manufacturers of psychotropic drugs hate guys like Mr. Ale and his unbreakable willpower. They want us to believe in better living through dependence on their psychobabble bullshit and their government-approved chemistry. The chemistry of Xanax and Zoloft and Paxil and Klonopin, a fucking poison often prescribed to recovering alcoholics. And I have no advertisers, so I can say that stuff is toxic shit. And fuck you, Merck and Glaxo and Pfizer and the rest of those outfits. They are actually much, much more despicable than Mr. Ale's soon-to-be ex-pal, the dealer. Because these scumbag drug companies peddle that shit by buying endorsements from whores of every stripe. Doctor whores, therapist whores, academic and research whores, and most importantly, government whores. Your government is just fine with multi-billion dollar corporations dealing drugs every bit as dangerous as street drugs, so long as they are approved and contribute to the tax base. Those drugs are just fine. And those corporate dealers get mansions and club memberships and honorary degrees and seats on other corporate boards. But that other dealer, like, say, that El Chapo guy, oh, he's way more honest than those fucks in their suits and corner offices. Because he never said his drugs were good for you, did he? He gets life in prison. And it is this unholy alliance of big pharma and big government and all the so-called experts and authority figures who have created what I call cripple culture. And the tent pole that holds up their massive canvas of lies is this one big lie. Alcoholism, or any addiction, is a disease. Let's look a little closer at that statement. If alcoholism is a disease, then I guess we can go down to the junior market and pick up a six-pack of cancer. And conversely, if somebody wants to cure cancer, they need only stop drinking cancer, right? Addiction is not a disease. It's not contagious. It will not spontaneously afflict someone due to some genetic predisposition. It does not develop with age like arthritis or dementia or weak bladder. And when they characterize addiction as a disease, what are they doing? They are releasing the addicted from responsibility, telling him they are helpless, they have no control, and they need shrinks and prescription drugs. It's such an insidious lie. Addiction is an acquisition, a choice. Nothing more, nothing less. Now, there are shades of addiction, of course. Some people, unfortunately, become addicted to painkillers due to some injury. That's different, but that's also a small percentage of drug addicts. But the perfectly healthy person who just wants to get high and then gets hooked, that is not a disease. To call it a disease is despicable and deceptive. Calling addictions a disease belittles and demeans and insults people who are legitimately ill. Now, that's not to say that addicts don't deserve our help. They do. But let's help from a foundation of truth, not bullshit. But Mr. Ale already has a firm grip on this, doesn't he? And so he has willpower. And he shall be drug-free of his own volition, because his quitting booze and coke was an achievement. And as regular Dojo listeners know, achievement is the key to real happiness and real self-esteem. Everything flows from there. Now, Mr. Ginger Ale, about that friend of yours. I guess that by now you've already 86'd him. He's a scumbag. Of course, misery does love company, and while he's shit-talking you and snorting rails and jiggling his video joystick on mommy's couch, you're listening to this show as you preacher curl your biceps into coconuts. And as you continue on your path to health and enlightenment, you shall find yourself more and more reviled by those ne'er-do-wells you left behind. People are weird about drinking, aren't they? And they need not be alcoholics. Occasionally, I'll refrain from imbibing for extended periods because maybe I want to drop a few pounds, or just because as much as we like the suds and the scotch, it ain't health food. Sometimes it's good to detox. And I've noticed when I've done this and been out with friends and everyone's ordering beer and wine and I ask for a Coke or maybe one of those fake beers, I get questions, funny looks, almost as if they're offended. Why aren't you drinking? Maybe it's groupthink or group drink. I don't know, but it is weird. So for guys like Mr. Ale, who have a serious intake of booze and worse, I can only imagine how much more the druggies become chagrined by one's abstinence. Here's a phrase I've kept etched in my mind since I first heard it, and it served me very well. Better alone than in bad company. It's really true. And on every level, not just with juice heads or junkies trying to drag you down. It might just be with those psychic vampires we talked about in our last episode. Asshole frenemies who are always chipping away at you. You know, everybody should be alone, or at least live alone for some extended period in their lives. When people go from parents' home directly to marriage or even a roommate situation, they miss out on some valuable life experience of living solamente. It helps you temper your mettle and discover who you really are. When there's no one beside you to fetch to or gab or share a meal, you learn self-reliance and to keep your own company. And how you spend that surplus time alone reveals a lot about you. Will you sit around and watch movies or porn or play video games all day like Mr. Ale's worthless ex-friend? Or will you hit the gym like the new and improved Mr. Ale? Or take some courses, or practice your arpeggios, or write that killer app or novel or business plan. Because not one of those very worthwhile pursuits I just mentioned is a group endeavor, is it? JC went into the desert solo for what, 40 days and nights? What was he doing out there? Probably eating crickets and cactus. Why did he do that? Maybe he did it to toughen up for the rough road ahead. And those crafty Aussies, they have walkabouts, right? They haul ass into the outback as teenagers for months at a time. Why? Because if they can hack that ordeal by themselves, then most else of what life throws at them will bounce like bullets off Superman's chest. That's why. But in our cripple culture, we're encouraged to melt down and medicate if somebody says something offensive or fails to give us our participation trophy. I recently went to a show at a local high school. It was some kind of cross-cultural hoedown with a bunch of similarly aged school kids visiting from mainland China. And it was an eye-opener. Each had their dance numbers and their choral numbers and so on. But then the guests from the East bounded out on stage and performed their routine of martial arts. And holy shit, these were teenage senseis, folks. Guys and a few girls doing stuff worthy of Jet Li. They were just amazing. On the way out, I asked the principal if they had a martial arts program. She told me her school was a school, not a military base. What a fucking asshole she was. We have another interesting question from a dude named Aaron down on the Gulf Coast. He's a seafaring man and operates large cargo vessels and ferries, and has for a number of years. He has a flawless safety record and is well-regarded and sought after in his industry. Here's what Aaron says. I seem to have lost my confidence. Something happened. I'm not exactly sure what. Suddenly, I find myself having to swallow a sense of uneasiness every time I make a maneuver. I have to think and plan at times when I used to be able to act on instinct, concisely and confidently. If anyone was watching, they might not know this was the case. I'm still as capable as I've ever been, but I can tell that this mystery feeling will hold me back when it comes time for me to step into more challenging roles in the future. Nothing remarkable has happened in my personal life, and my work routine hasn't changed a bit. So I'm puzzled and concerned about this. It boils down to one question. How do I get my confidence back? Aaron's problem is not all that uncommon. And he's ahead of the game because he's already made something of himself and enjoys what he does, as most sailors do. And more so, he's confronting it head on with zero bullshit. But we hear of this happening all the time. Big league entertainers suddenly coming down with stage fright. NBA stars who can't sink a shot for shit anymore. Cops, afraid to walk a beat they used to rule. Happens to the best of us. But why? Confidence is a tricky commodity, isn't it? Overconfident and you're cocky, even arrogant. Underconfident and you're hesitant. Zero confidence and you're in paralysis. Then there's lots of false confidence. That fuels most of Hollywood. But who cares if some hero actor is actually a jangling bag of hammers? All they'll do is fuck up a movie that probably sucks even before his scenes begin. But if a dude like Aaron fucks up, people might die. So this is a problem. So we need to look at a couple of elements here. Where does confidence come from? And what can undermine it? First, let's see where it comes from. It's largely comprised of its first cousin word, competence. You can fake confidence, but you cannot fake competence. And after a while, true competence shows itself like a searchlight in the night sky. When my first daughter was about a year old, she got a little growth at the base of her throat that looked like a big mosquito bite. Soon it was the size of a BB. In only a few weeks, it was as big as a grape. We took her to 6 doctors, and with each one, I knew in seconds whether they were competent or not. All 6 of them shook hands firmly, harumphed, and acted very doctorly and knowledgeable. But when I asked them the golden question, what is that thing? Every one of them danced and blew smoke in my face.
Well, it could be this, and let's watch a little longer, and...
One asshole's confidence arced right into the arrogant zone when he starts scribbling hospital orders and telling me what time he was going to operate on my baby. I said, "Hang on there, doc. Do you know what you're operating on?" He was pissed. I could do an entire show about arrogant assholes who have an aversion to uttering the words, "I don't know." He tried to bullshit me again, and finally, I went into prosecuting attorney mode. "Do you know what that growth is on my daughter's chest, yes or no?" Now he's really pissed, but still unable to say those three words. He goes,
"There may be a determination after I remove it."
I told him he could experiment on somebody else's kid and left. On the seventh doctor, that's right, seven, he looks at my kid and says, "Oh yeah, that's a zama-zama, I can't even remember what he called it." And he says he sees and removes several of those each year, no big deal. This guy, number seven, had unshakable confidence built on a foundation of rock-solid competence. But Aaron is no beginner. He's been doing this for years. One of the first places to look when confidence wanes is your physical condition. Even one sleepless night can screw you up. Fatigue erodes confidence, but Aaron says there's been no change in his condition or any other external factors to account for his sudden jitters. Now, pro sports franchises spend big bucks trying to restore confidence in athletes who lose it. They try everything from transcendental meditation to biofeedback, you name it. But when the mojo wanes, it's difficult to restore. Here's a few tricks you can try, Aaron. Perhaps you know some old salt who's been doing what you do since paddle wheelers. If you do, and he's a good guy, ask him to take a ride with you and hang with you on the bridge. Sometimes we get so caught up in achieving perfection, we subconsciously criticize ourselves, and that can ding our confidence. So even though you're doing everything right, it helps to have someone ultra-experienced and qualified in your field, slap you on the back and tell you you're damn good at what you do. You might also try breaking your routine. Musicians can over-rehearse songs to a point where they become stale or even hit clinkers. Maybe you need to step away from the helm for a while. String together a few vacation days and avoid all things nautical. When you return, you may find you have a fresh perspective and renewed confidence. Sometimes excelling at something outside of your career can help you reclaim your confidence where it really counts. Try a game or a sport or a hobby where you have a natural ability and might see tangible results quickly. A fast jolt of success in anything can clear the blockage in your confidence pipeline. I've seen that technique work wonders with guys who are floored by some broken romance. Instead of waiting for the perfect pointy replacement for the one who stepped on the heart, smart guys get themselves a starter kit. Any chick who wants to go out and have some laughs can really help you get over the one that done you wrong. Now, while all of these may or may not work, Aaron, here's a stone fact that you might use to your advantage. It matters not the size of the brain or the IQ. Nobody, on this planet at least, is capable of holding more than one thought in the mind at once. Can't be done. So when you're at the wheel of that vessel and those flying monkeys of doubt start nibbling at your nerve, whip out your imaginary 12-gauge and blow those fuckers into a fine mist of blood and fur. Visualize their corpses sinking beneath the waves after you blast them. You may find your serenity and your confidence have returned after that violent and cathartic mental interlude. Now last up, we have a family matter that requires some diplomacy. This is from a listener named Mike, and he starts off with an irresistible statement. Do you watch a man throw his life away or not? Now, there is a landmine waiting to be stepped on. Yet, which of us has not felt exactly as Mike has? Marriages can wreck long-standing friendships as easily as divorces, maybe even more often. You have a pal you've been buds with forever, and he meets some chick, and nobody, not you or your mutual friends or his parents or siblings, can figure out what in the hell he sees in her. She's annoying, manipulative, sneaky, greedy, two-faced, deceptive, lazy, demanding, chews with her mouth open, and most unforgivably, not pointy. What's a friend to do? By the way, that was all me, gang. Let's continue with Mike's email. He goes on to say, my cousin has a son. He's 22, just got engaged. Been dating this girl for 6 years. It's a long time at 22. He does all right for himself. He just needs to manage his money better. She said she wouldn't say yes to him unless he got her the ring she wanted. So he borrowed money to pay for it. She wants fancy dinners out and big diamonds, but bitches about other people being entitled and spoiled. She's a hypocrite. She keeps tabs on him constantly. If he lives under the microscope now, what will it be like when they're married? Why is he with her? Quote, I've put too much into this relationship to throw it away, unquote, he says. So what do I do? 1. Do I not go to the wedding as a protest? 2. Do I try to reason with him, which I've tried before? 3. Do I go with some slut whose tits are hanging out and treat the wedding like a drunken rave, as a middle finger to this money-grubbing no-good bride? Or 4. Do I go, be silent, to not show my disgust, and accept that it's out of my control? Ladies and gentlemen, we have a winner. Mike, number 4 is not only your best choice, it's your only choice. Your cousin's son, I guess that makes him what, your second cousin, is not your son, nor is he your responsibility. And he's 22, at least chronologically, an adult. I have seen multiple occasions where guys and chicks with the best of intentions have stuck their noses into romances and laid bare their true feelings about some grimbo or jackal, and without fail, I mean 100% of the time, it backfires. You see, his girlfriend, his fiancée, has an edge on you, your second cousin, the mom, the dad, and God himself. She shares his bed, and after 6 years, she's got a toe-curling hold on him that overrides any and all flaws you or even he might see. So out of respect for your pal and the rest of your family, go to the goddamn wedding. Congratulate him, give him a nice gift, and then leave early with your big-titted slut date. Sounds like she can assuage any pain you'll endure at the nuptials. Hey folks, thanks for stopping by the dojo once again. As you've heard, we're here to help. So if you've got a problem that's dogging you, lay it on us at thatlarryshow@gmail.com. Or if you want to verbalize it, call us at 302-71-LARRY. If you like what you're hearing, slide over to Patreon/thatlarryshow and join the dojo for special rewards, bonus episodes. And so, my friends, remember, everybody has problems. The key to beating them is to face them head on and pummel them to death with the truth. The moment we start to camouflage or sugarcoat them with phony phrases and lies, they win, we lose. We'll see you next Tuesday, right here at the crossroads of madness and enlightenment. And until that time, take no shit.